her. I'm going to have more encounters with her, said Nate. I'll need you to help cover some of our meetings outside the swimming hall. Marcus nodded. As you see more of her, it will become interesting, especially what she does immediately after your meetings. That is when they always run to the phone or rendezvous with an embassy officer. As much as you can, let us know your plans. If you wish, we can make some suggestions for places to meet her, Marcus said. One last thing, said Yana, pouring another glass of schnapps. If you would forgive me, she looks like a nice person, a sweet girl. She needs a friend. Marcus looked at her and back to Nate with arched eyebrows. Nate reviewed Archie and Veronica's reports with Gable. Good. Keep an eye on her, especially if she's got anybody from her embassy supporting her, said Gable. If we see she's got backup, then it's possible she's operational. Maybe even she's working on you. Not in a million years, said Nate. No way. Glad you're so sure. Anyway, go after her hard. Take your time. In a hurry. Nate set a goal of seeing Dominica at least once a week outside of the swimming. He scoured the city for places to meet without being seen. They met after work in basement bars, for coffee on Saturday mornings, lunches on Sunday at remote cafes, put her in the chair with her back to the room. There were embassy Russians all over Helsinki, and Nate wanted to avoid a chance sighting. Build a friendship, stay clandestine, always arrive separately, leave apart. Stay off the phones, vary patterns, build a relationship. A waste of time. Dominica applied her own tradecraft. She checked for coverage as she walked through the city to their meetings. Finns would stare at the beautiful dark-haired girl walking up the escalator or slipping into a snowy alley or leaving a store by a back entrance, unaware she was looking for coverage or that she was watching from across the street as Nate arrived at their coffee shop, counting heads, looking at faces, marking hats and overcoats. They were getting to know each other. Over the last few meetings, they had talked, really talked, a natural evolution after spending time together. Dominica assessed Nate as honest, natural, intelligent. He was not Nico Torni. He was, well, just American. His comments about living in Moscow were evasive, of course they would be. He was hiding the fact that he had been handling a Russian mole. Dominica didn't much care for his comments about Russia, even though she knew she felt mostly the same way. Come on, get going, she told herself. She had to spend more time with him, continue concentrating on his patterns. She had to determine when he was operational. She felt the pressure. If there was no breakthrough soon, with the center in Volontov bearing down, would she contemplate a physical approach? Нельзя, she thought. No, never. He was attractive, his openness and humor appealing. But forget it. How many meetings had there been? Nate felt the anticipation of seeing Dominica again, but he wasn't convinced that he could persuade her of anything. She was unbending. Facing 100 surveillance cars in Moscow didn't faze him, but he fretted over how to determine what motivated her. If she had an operational agenda, Nate couldn't identify it. It almost seemed as if she were in Helsinki just to get experience, and that didn't make sense. The SVR connection was important, the aspect that made her a worthwhile recruitment target. He had to get a handle soon, or Forsyth would grow impatient, and Gable would kick his ass. One thing. He could look at her face for hours. Jesus, listen to you. Concentrate on the developmental, on the assessment, what makes her tick. They talked more easily now, even though they disagreed. She got hot and fussy whenever he pinged on Russia. He could see that, but he also had a sense that she grudgingly agreed with him at times. She didn't believe all the propaganda. Maybe an opening, maybe not. He looked into the mirror and combed his hair. This Sunday he had suggested lunch at a little ethnic restaurant in Pilahisto, a crossroads community on the metro line northeast of the city. Dominica had agreed to meet him there. Weeks before, Archie had suggested it as out of the way. We will not encounter any Russian friends there, he said. One of us on the train watching her, the other covering you. Nate threw an oiled field coat over a V-neck sweater and corduroy pants. He wore ripple-soled walking shoes. He left his apartment and walked a stair-step route through the swept streets of Krunenhaka, then along the frozen waterfront, then kicked off his real dry-cleaning route. Across town, Dominika was also looking in the mirror, her blue eyes wide. She did not use perfume, but combed her hair for the 10th time with the tortoiseshell talisman. She got ready to walk out of her apartment to take the metro, taking a slantwise look through the curtains of her front window to the street below. She looked forward to this, talking to him, sparring, learning a little more each time. She wore a turtleneck sweater and tweed jacket over woolen pants for warmth. She also wore sensible shoes. She tied a scarf over her head like an old babushka and left her apartment, locking the door. She went down to the basement of her apartment building, walked through the storeroom, and pushed through the boiler room. A small corridor led from the room to a heavy iron-barred window high on the wall that Dominika had discovered several weeks ago. It looked as though it had been a coal chute long since converted. It had taken her almost an hour to pick the padlocked grill two nights ago. The damn things weren't easy, especially since she had only an improvised torsion wrench fashioned from a hairpin. Dominika stacked boxes under the window, boosted herself up, and wormed through the window. Some start to a date, she thought, thinking about seeing him again. Dominika eased the window shut and stepped out into the alleyway, looking up at the curtained windows. Nothing. She walked quietly up the alleyway, squeezed between a parked truck and a dumpster, boosted herself over a low brick wall and out onto a city street. She was already a block away from her apartment building. Her coat collar was turned up and the scarf hid her features. She walked west for another block casually, checking for repeats whenever she crossed the street and looked both ways for traffic. She entered the Compi complex, walked through the mall, stopped at a bookstore, checked for faces, then down into the metro entrance. She stayed still on the slowly descending escalator, using the reflective bounce on the fashion posters on the walls. No silhouettes. Dominika was halfway to the platform level as a slight elderly lady dressed in a raincoat and floppy hat stepped on the escalator at the top and started down behind her. She was holding a bunch of flowers wrapped in green paper and a string bag with two apples. Veronica hoped that one day she could speak to the dear girl about how predictable she had been, using the mall and its integral metro station so close to her apartment. Nate's surveillance instructor 100 dim years ago was named Jay, a former physicist who wore a Van Dyke beard and long, sandy hair and looked, well, a lot like Van Dyke. "Get out of your head, stop being heroes," he had said. "If you detect surveillance, your night is over. You will abort." He had drawn a horizontal line on the chalkboard. "Your SDR is to compel surveillance you have not seen to show themselves. It is not designed to lose anyone." "All surveillance has a breaking point," he had said, intersecting the line with a vertical stroke. "This is the point when the bad guys must choose between staying undetected and losing the eye." He brushed his hands of chalk dust. "If you can force them to show themselves without breaking their hearts, you have succeeded. For that night only. Then you have to start all over again." Fuck breaking their hearts, thought Nate. If he had coverage, they'd have to show. He slid down an embankment near the rail yard behind the central station, climbed a chain-link fence in an alley, and dodged traffic as he crossed the E-12. He wondered what she would be wearing. Along his route, Nate would look for Archie, but he was wasting his time. The old man was a ghost on the street. Protoplasm, smoke around dry ice. Archie was counter-surveilling Nate, looking for repeats using time and distance. Forget coats, forget hats. Archie was looking at the way people walked, their gaits, the sets of their shoulders, the shapes of their ears and noses, things surveillance cannot change. And shoes. They never change shoes. 3 hours after climbing through half of Helsinki and seeing Archie, finally, with the duffel in his right hand, "You're clean," Nate was confident he was black. The modest country restaurant was owned by an Afghan family. Nate entered the small whitewashed dining room, decorated with rugs on the wall and colored cushions on the chairs. Each table had a candle. A dial radio on a shelf played softly. The place was deserted, only one other couple, young Finns, at a corner table. A wonderful smell of warm spices and stewed lamb came from the kitchen. Nate was seated at a corner table facing the front window. In 2 minutes, Archie and Veronica walked arm in arm by the window, looking straight ahead. Veronica flicked the side of her nose with a finger, all clear signal. Archie thought it idiotic, but she was implacable. He looked at her and rolled his eyes, then they disappeared. A minute later, Dominika pushed through the door, saw Nate, and walked to the table. Cool, confident, composed. He held her chair, but she shrugged her coat off by herself when he made to help her. 2 glasses of wine came. Nate's bad knee was throbbing from when he had wrapped it on a fence post an hour ago. His left hand was scraped after a controlled slide down the rail embankment. Dominika's jacket sleeve had a rip at the shoulder from when she had caught it on a corner of the dumpster behind her house. A woolen sock and shoe were wet. She had gone ankle deep in a slushy puddle crossing the street after getting off the train at Pilahisto. "I'm glad you were able to find the place," said Nate. "It's a little out of the way, but a friend said the food was excellent." He looked at the light on her hair. "I hope it wasn't too far to come." "It was an easy trip. There was hardly anyone on the train," said Dominika. "If you only knew," thought Nate. "I hope you like the restaurant. Have you tried Afghan food?" "No, but there are several Afghan restaurants in Moscow. They're supposed to be good." His halo was rich and full, and Dominika thought of her father. "Because, you know, I worried about inviting you to an Afghan place. I worried you would think I was being provocative," said Nate, smiling. He wanted to turn the corner, get her to relax. "I do not think you are provocative. You are an American. You cannot help yourself. I am beginning to understand you, perhaps a little." She dipped a piece of hot flatbread into a little bowl of chickpea paste drizzled with oil. "As long as you can forgive me for being an American," Nate said. "I forgive you," said Dominika, looking straight at him. Mona Lisa's smile and another bite of bread. "Then I'm happy," said Nate, leaning on his elbows, watching her. "What about you? Are you happy?" "What an odd question," said Dominika. "No, not right now. I mean, are you happy generally, with your life?" said Nate. "Yes," she said. "It's just that sometimes you seem so serious. Sad, even. I know your father died several years ago. I know you were close." Dominika had mentioned her father to Nate. Dominika swallowed. She didn't want to talk about this, about herself. "My father was a wonderful man, a university professor, kind and generous." "What did he think about the changes in Russia? Was he glad to see the Soviet Union disappear?" "Yes, of course. As we all did, I mean, welcome the changes. He was a Russian patriot." She took another sip of wine, wiggled her wet toes in her shoe. "What about you, Nate?" She wasn't going to let him hijack the conversation. "What about your father? You told me you're from a big family. But what is your father like? Are you close?" Nate took a breath. They were going back and forth, trading question for question. A week ago, Nate had confided to Gable that he felt he was going nowhere with the Russian girl. She was too tight, too guarded. He couldn't see that he was making any dent in her armor. "What do you expect?" said Gable. "You want to bang her right away? She's young and nervous, a little Russian nutso. She doesn't have fucking supervisors as sensitive and helpful as you got." Nate noticed for the first time that Gable had a 1971 Laotian calendar on his office wall. "Throw her some bones. Show some petticoat. Just don't bullshit her. See if she'll relax." "My father is a lawyer," said Nate. "He's very successful, owns his own practice. He's influential in the law and politics. He's close to my two older brothers, both work for my father. The law firm has been in my family for 4 generations. Close to his older brothers, she thought. Dominica went straight at the question. And why did you not go into the law with your father? You could be a rich man. Don't all Americans want to be rich? Where did you get that impression? I don't know. I suppose I always wanted to go on my own and be independent. Diplomacy appealed to me, and I liked to travel, so I thought I would try something else first. But your father, was he disappointed that you did not follow your brothers? Dominica asked. Sure, I suppose so, said Nate. But maybe I was getting away from people always telling me what to do. Know what I mean? Images flashed behind Dominika's eyelids. Ballet, Ustinov, Sparrow School, Uncle Vanya. But is it enough to have just run away from your family? Don't you have to accomplish something in the bargain? She was going to press him, she decided. Running away is not exactly how I would describe it, said Nate, a little nettled. I have a career. I'm contributing to my country. He saw Gondorf's face floating above the table. Of course, said Dominica. But how exactly do you contribute? She took a sip of wine. Lots of ways, said Nate. Give me an example, said Dominica. Well, as an example, I handle the CIA's best asset, a high-level penetration of your frigging monolithic service to thwart the worldwide evil designs of the Russian Federation and your lupine president for life, he thought. I've been doing some interesting economic work lately, working on timber exports from Finland, he said. Sounds interesting, Dominica said, blinking at him. I thought you were going to talk to me about world peace. Nate looked up at her. The purple mantle behind his head and shoulders blazed. I would if I thought Russians knew what world peace was. He looked around the little dining room, with Afghanistan and all. Dominica took another sip of wine. Next time I will take you to a Vietnamese restaurant, I know, she said. They sat there looking at each other, neither willing to look away. What the fuck is going on? Nate thought. She'd gotten under his skin a little. He remembered that Veronica thought she didn't have a job to do. Was she working him? Her blue eyes were steady across the table. It's all right, Dominica said, reading his thoughts. Just don't dismiss Russia all the time. We deserve some respect. Very interesting, he thought. We'll think back and remember this as our first fight, he said. Dominica bit into a piece of flatbread. How do you say, I will cherish the memory, she said. Their food came. Dominica had ordered a rich lamb stew with lentils, which arrived steaming in a large bowl. A dollop of thick yogurt spread out over the top. Nate had ordered borani, dark caramelized pieces of sweet pumpkin and meat sauce with yogurt. It was delicious, and Nate made Dominica try a forkful. They finished their wine and ordered coffee. Next time I will pay the bill, said Dominica. We should go to Suomenlanna before it gets too warm, and there are crowds. I'll let you arrange it all, he said, and she nodded, looking at him through her eyelashes. You know, Nate, said Dominica, I think you are honest and funny and kind. I like having you as a friend. Nate braced himself for what could be coming. I hope you consider me a friend. She wants to be friends now, thought Nate. Of course I do, he said. Even though I'm from Russia? Especially since you're from Russia. They sat in the fading light, looking at each other, each thinking where this was leading, how each could bring the other along. 45 minutes later, they stood on the metro platform. It was an above-ground station this far out. It was getting dark, cold, but not freezing. Nate didn't offer to drive her back into the city, and in any event, Dominica would not have accepted. Nate wasn't going to risk a chance sighting of Dominica and Nate's diplomatic-plated car by another Russian from her embassy. The fat, glass-nosed train whizzed into the station and slowed. There was no one else on the platform, and the lighted interior of the train was empty. Thank you for a wonderful afternoon, said Dominica, turning toward him. Their eyes met, and she shook his hand, the proper SVR gladiator. He had decided he was going to test her a little, so he held her hand, leaned forward, and kissed her on the cheek. Very charming, she thought, but she had seen somewhat more in her short career. The musical horn sounded, and she stepped into the carriage, unsmiling, a faint limp when she turned and waved as the doors hissed shut. As the train picked up speed, Nate saw through the accelerating windows an old lady in a parka sitting in the next car with a basket of knitting on her lap. The train was flashing by almost too fast for Nate to see Veronica flick the side of her nose. The platform had been deserted, so how did she manage to get on the train? During their respective journeys back into the city, both Dominica and Nate should have been cataloging their impressions, remembering details and composing tomorrow's contact reports in their heads. But neither of them was. Rather, Nate remembered how her cheek had felt, and how she had stepped onto the train through the open doors with the slightest catch in her stride, and Dominica thought about his hands, one scraped red and raw, and how he had blinked in surprise, followed by delight, when she had thrown Vietnam back in his face. Kadobarani, Afghan pumpkin. Deeply brown large chunks of peeled sugar pumpkin, cover liberally with sugar, and bake covered in medium oven until tender and caramelized. Serve over thick meat sauce of sauteed ground beef, diced onions, garlic, tomato sauce, and water. Garnish with sauce of drained yogurt, dill, and pureed garlic. Chapter 12. Through the open office door, Forsythe watched Nate work on the cable covering the last developmental lunch with Igorova. Nash was pushing the development now, but skeptically. It was slow going with the Russian, and Nate's confidence was still shaky. He was desperate to log a success, but banging your head against the wall took its toll. Inevitably, the stakes were getting higher. With every contact with Igorova, Forsythe knew that headquarters would push harder, offer outside assessment, begin asking for ops tests. If Nate brought her to recruitment, they'd insist on interviews and a polygraph. The most recent headquarters response to Nate's contact reports was, as Gable said, already a fucking harbinger of things to come in the future. 1. With receipt of this cable, please confine reporting on this case to restricted handling channels. Subject ref has been encrypted GT Diva. Please establish station bigot list and relay to HQs. 2. Headquarters continues to applaud station and case officers' diligence and developmental effort against Diva. We find especially significant Diva's continued willingness to meet with CO, certainly unauthorized, and to discuss personal thoughts. Urge CO to continue to probe for professional details and determine extent subject will respond. Officers' elicitation efforts have paid off to date. Look forward to future progress. Kudos. 3. In light ref developments, solicit updated station ops plan and ops tests contemplated for future Diva contact. Please advise next scheduled meeting and security measures planned. HQ is standing by to consult on possible next steps. Forsythe knew the signs. The last line presaged interference from headquarters if the case really started taking off. The buzzards would be circling, but a stampede of visitors wouldn't start until the weather turned warmer, thought Forsythe. He called Nate into his office at the end of the day. Have a seat, Nate. Your last cables on Diva were really first rate, objective with good case officer assessment, said Forsythe. Thanks, Chief, said Nate. Privately, he wasn't so sure. He knew the growing audience who saw his cables would read them with an increasingly critical eye. Your tradecraft is tight, keep it that way. Marble's a priority, of course. But after that, make sure your pursuit of Diva is undetectable to her embassy. Forsythe thought for a moment. That translator you met, what's his name? Tishkov. He was an interesting nugget. But working two Russians in the same embassy probably is not a good idea, especially since Diva is coming out to play. Maybe you can save Tishkov for later. Nate thought that if he didn't recruit Dominika, all the Tishkovs in Helsinki wouldn't help him. Too many expectations. And Forsythe pointed out another danger. This case is on headquarters scope now, big time. Everyone's nose is going to be in it. If you recruit her, all the heat seekers will come out of the woodwork. Right now, you have to figure out whether Diva has the inclination to doubt her system. Is she willing to listen to you and let you lead her to make the big decision? Forsythe sat back. Not a bad job, sitting with a beautiful Russian trying to convince her to spy for you. Okay, get out of here and have fun. The door's open any time you have a question. Gable took him to a little bistro owned by Greeks and made him try the scrambled eggs, fluffy and laced with onions and tomatoes. Over eggs and multiple beers that night, Gable tried to lighten Nate's mood about the Diva case. Don't try to get her in bed before you recruit her. She will correctly conclude that you fucked her to get her to sign up. Recruit her first, then you'll be able to enjoy two of life's singular pleasures, running an SVR officer and eating breakfast in bed with cunty fingers. Gable threw back his drink and ordered two more for them. Golly, Marty, I feel I'm really growing under your coaching, said Nate, rolling his eyes. All I know is I have to get her to relax, to like me. What happens if this starts getting emotional? Gable looked over at him with a face. Please. There's no such thing as a case officer falling in love with an agent. It's not allowed. It cannot be done. Get it out of your head. Go ahead and bang her if you must, but love? The large main room of the SVR Residentura in the Russian embassy in Helsinki was dotted with plain wooden desks set up in vaguely staggered rows. None of the desks had a terminal, but most had electric typewriters with odd lacquered turquoise covers sitting on small metal typing tables. These were specially produced Jajubava typewriters manufactured in Moscow under license for the SVR and FSB and securely pouched to overseas residenturi to ensure the machines were not tampered with. The low-ceilinged room was harshly lit by overhead fluorescent tubes also imported from Moscow for the same reason. They hummed and blinked and reflected milk white off the scratched glass desktops. Along the exterior walls, the small dormer windows, the residentura was on the attic level of the Russian embassy, were secured first by exterior bars, then by bolted steel shutters, then double-paned glass, and finally by heavy gray curtains, the hems of which trailed ragged on the floor. Worn deer trails in the bare carpet ran between the desks. The shabby room smelled of stale cigarettes and cold black tea in paper cups. At one end of the room, there were two offices. One was glassed in, a classified file room, with the clerk sitting at a desk in a circle of light from the gooseneck lamp. The room was lined with tall safes, some of whose drawers were open, others closed and secured by irregular yellow wax seals, as if someone had been throwing fried eggs at them. The other office was totally private, the windowless office of Resident Volontov. The half-dozen officers in the SVR Residentura kept their heads down over their work as Volontov's voice came through the closed door of his office. It was obvious that he was dressing down the newly arrived junior officer from Moscow, Igorova. "Moscow has been hectoring me for progress reports," yelled Volontov, leaning over his desk. "They want to see more results against the American." The orange cloud around his head was like smoke, swirling and unsettled. "He's feeling the pressure," thought Dominika. "I am making progress, Colonel," said Dominika. "We have had a dozen encounters, all of them discreet. He has made no indication that he has reported the contact to his superiors, a significant development." "Don't tell me what's significant and what isn't. I directed you, the center directed you, to document each of the meetings with Nash. Why aren't you drafting telegrams for my review and dispatch to Yasenyevo?" "I have drafted telegrams. You yourself told me to combine several messages in summary format. I cannot write about contacts until they actually materialize." Volontov slammed his desk drawer shut with a bang, and the orange smoke swirled. "You'll do well to be respectful and leave the sarcasm for another time." Now I want you to accelerate this slow waltz with the American. You'll remember that the ultimate goal is to elicit information that may lead to the identification of a traitor. It is urgent, paramount, that you do.
Yes, said Dominica. I understand the ultimate goal. I drafted the operational proposal in the first place. Everything is progressing.
That includes observing whether he seems to be preparing for an imminent operation, whether he is going on a trip, whether he is nervous or distracted or apprehensive.
Yes, Colonel, I know all these things. I am confident I will be able to discern changes in his schedule.
Dominica wasn't sure she could. Their relationship was stuck, it seemed. Volontov pretended to look thoughtfully at Dominica. His eyes flitted from her chin to her waist and in between. Many of the indicators we're looking for, he said, sitting back, are perhaps most discernible the better one knows the target.
In my experience, said Volontov, the more intimate the relationship, the more intimate the conversation.
In your experience with Moroccan T-boys, thought Dominica.
She tamped down a cold rage as she looked at the warts on Volontov's neck.
Very well, Colonel. I am to meet the American again next week. I will remember your guidance concerning intimacy, and I will report progress. I will propose additional meetings in the hope we can discover his work schedule. Does that meet with your approval?
Yes, yes, it's fine. But do not underestimate an emotional dependence. Do you understand? Orange haze swirling around his head. Nerves. Fear. The words came out before she could stop them.
Why don't you just come out and say it, said Dominica, coming out of her seat. Why don't you just order me to get on my back? I am an officer of the service. I serve my country. I won't let you talk to me that way.
Her body was trembling with rage and frustration. Before the scowling Volontov could react, Dominica wheeled and walked out of his office, slamming the door behind her. If it had been any other junior officer, Volontov thought bitterly, I would have followed him into the outer office and stripped the hide off him with a birch branch, then shipped him home under escort to the Lubyanka basement. Let this one go for now, he thought. With her pedigree, it's safer this way.
Eyes watched Dominica burst out of Volontov's office and make her way red-faced to her desk in the corner, hard against the angle of a dormer. She sat gripping the edge of her desk, head bowed. This is some hothead, thought her colleagues. They had heard Dominica's voice raised. Was she some kind of fool? Best to keep away from this samoboistvo, this suicide waiting to happen, they all thought. All except one. The conversation with Resident Volontov festered inside Dominica for the 5 days before she was to meet Nate again, this time for dinner at a local restaurant. At night, in her apartment, she looked at her reflection in the dark glass of the window, the lights of Punavori showing through the treetops. Who are you? She asked herself wearily. How much will you take? How she longed to wipe the eye of the beast, to puncture the desiccated self-importance of these users and falsifiers. To do so publicly was suicidal. No, better a secret revenge, undetectable. Something delectable she could hold inside her, something she knew that they did not know. Volontov was just the latest nadzirateil in a procession of hoggish overseers in her life and career, but he was here and now, and she wanted to damage him, to extinguish the grimy orange halo around his warty face. She had to put her building rage into a box and calculate. The operation against Nate was critical to Volontov. He feared failing the center. She could get back at him, at them, by ruining it. How to do it without destroying yourself. Later that evening, she stopped with the toothbrush still in her mouth and looked at herself in the mirror. You could give the American a surprise, drop your cover, let him know your SVR. Izmena. Treason, that was what it would be. Godzudarstvennaya izmena. High treason. But it would ruin Volontov's case, put the Americans on guard, would rock Nate back on his heels. It would be interesting to see his surprise when he learned that she was an intelligence officer. He would respect her for that,
He would be impressed. He would respect her.
Come on, are you insane? Have you forgotten discipline, responsibility to the Rodina?
But this was not an act against Russia. She was getting back at them, knocking over their dominoes, not selling state secrets. She would be in control. She would determine how far was far enough. No, it was madness and trouble and impossible. She would have to find her satisfaction elsewhere. She brushed her hair and looked at the tapered handle of the brush, imagining it seated firmly between Volontov's buttocks. Then she turned off the light and went into her bedroom. At the end of the week, Nate and Dominika were sitting at the Ersatz Ristorante Valletta in Tolo at a corner table. The restaurant was classic Italian in Helsinki. A plastic canopy with Italian colors jutted out from the first floor of the apartment block in which it was located. Inside, the requisite red and white tablecloths and runny candles completed the decor. The weather was still cold, but winter would break soon. A few more feet of snow, then the short spring would give way to delicious summer, with the harbor full of sails and the ferries running. Dominika and Nate had arrived separately, as usual. Under her winter coat, she wore a black belted knit dress and black wool stockings. The dress clung to her as she hung her coat over the back of her chair. Nate wore a suit, but he had stripped off his necktie, and his shirt, in a blue pencil stripe, was open at the neck. He had left the embassy 2 hours before and had driven up the E-12 until Ruskiasuo, cut west and come back south on the surface streets, entering Tolo only after having seen Archie parked on a side street with the left-hand visor down. All clear. Nate had huddled with Gable the day before.
"Get her talking about work," Gable had said. "She's an SVR officer. That's her guilty secret."
Nate nodded. He squirmed, agonizing over the need for a breakthrough moment. Forsyth had praised him. Gable was nothing but encouragement, but Nate was getting antsy. He needed to turn a corner, and right now. They chatted for a minute while looking at the improbable oversized menus. "You were quiet tonight," said Dominika, looking at him over the top of the menu. "Same majestic purple, he never changes," she thought.
"Hard day at the office," said Nate.
"Keep it nonchalant."
"I was late for a meeting, left figures out of a cable. My boss was not happy and told me so."
"I cannot believe you are not excellent at your work."
"Well, I feel better now," Nate said, ordering two glasses of wine from the hovering waiter.
"You look nice tonight."
"Do you think so?"
He was paying her a compliment. How confident he seemed.
"Yes, I do. You make me forget my boss and work and the lousy day." His boss. She wondered what he really thought.
Dominika looked back down at the menu, but she had trouble focusing on the print.
"You are not alone, Nate. My superior also scolds." She could feel her heartbeat in her ears. She took a swallow of wine, felt it light up her stomach.
"So we're both in hot water. What did you do?"
"It's not important," Dominika said. "He is an unpleasant person. Nico Turni. And ugly. He has warts."
How many residents in Helsinki have warts, she thought.
"What's that, Nico Turni?"
"As if you don't know," thought Dominika.
"He is a peasant, no culture."
Nate laughed. "What's his name? Have I met him on the dip circuit?"
She had changed her mind 5 times in the last 2 days, had ultimately decided to steer clear of silly games. She looked at Nate across the table. He was munching grissini, grinning at her.
"No. Izmena. Treason."
"His name is Volontov. Maxim," she said, hearing her own voice through someone else's ears.
"Bozhmoy, my God," she thought. "I've said it."
She looked at Nate closely. He was scanning his menu and did not look up when she said the name. The halo around his head did not change.
"Nope, I don't think I've met him."
Nate felt the hairs on his arms stand up. Holy shit, what's she doing?
She just declared herself. Well, you are fortunate then, Dominica said, still staring at him. Nate looked up from the menu. Had Dominica made a mistake and let the resident's name slip out? She looked back at him evenly. No, she had deliberately said it. Why is he so bad? Asked Nate. He is disgusting, an old Soviet bastard. Every day he stares at me. What is the expression in English? Dominica kept looking at Nate evenly. He undresses you with his eyes, said Nate. Yes, said Dominica. No reaction from him. Had he missed what she just said? My God, had she gone too far? Then, suddenly, she knew she didn't care. She had slid down the slope, and now was custodian of a mortally dangerous secret. Are you happy now, Durak, you little fool? He sounds horrible, but I can understand why he stares. Nate looked at Dominica and smiled a boyish grin. Jesus, he thought, this came out of the blue. Is this a signal to me? Is she being coy? He looked at her unwavering blue eyes. Her chest rose and fell under the wool dress. Her fingertips gripped the edges of the ridiculous, enormous menu. Now you are being Nicoturni, she said. Did he already know? Was he so good to hide his reaction? Well, sounds like we both have trouble at work. We can commiserate. What does commiserate mean? Asked Dominica. Blue-eyed stare. Crying on each other's shoulders, said Nate. Purple, steady, and warm. Dominica didn't know whether to laugh or scream. Stay professional. Crying we can save for later. I'm hungry. Let's order, she said. It was a Monday morning when a restricted handling cable from headquarters was passed to Nate, informing the station that Marble had communicated via COVCOM that he would be arriving in Helsinki in 2 weeks as part of a Russian trade delegation participating in a 2-day Scandinavian-Baltic economic summit. Marble relayed that he was using the delegation as cover for travel. He would stay under Line KR's radar that way. He was further covered by being operational, in town to attempt to bump the senior member of the Canadian delegation, Assistant Trade Minister Anthony Trunk, who the SVR thought was a valid recruitment prospect based on the minister's predilection for men in their early 20s. A senior Canadian official and a pidor to boot. The Americans department had primacy, and Marble was the logical candidate to travel to Helsinki to sniff at Trunk's cologne-scented personage. The trip was approved by the center. As Marble knew would happen, instructions were issued to exclude the Helsinki residentura from both the conference and the operation. Marble had subsequently signaled in his satellite burst transmission that he would be able to meet with CIA handlers late at night after the daily sessions and celebratory dinners concluded. Risky, but possible. A headquarters Russia analyst would arrive 2 days before the start of the conference to help prepare current intelligence requirements for the meetings. A long list of follow-up questions generated by Marble's previous intelligence reports was cabled to station. At the bottom of the list, as always, the softly phrased counterintelligence questions. Do you have knowledge of any moles in the U.S. government? Are you aware of the compromise of any U.S. classified material? Do you know of any intelligence operations being directed against U.S. persons or systems? Mild, open-ended questions designed to open the furnace door and look inside. They went down the checklist. Replenishing camo gear was impossible. Marble would go through customs on his return from Helsinki. A universal contact plan would be updated. Forsyth vetoed the addition of 2 senior officers from headquarters to participate in the debriefings. Nate was Marble's handler, and he would do the job. Now there were preparations no one else could make. Nate receded into the background, went out onto the streets, dropped from sight. By night he cased dark alleys, angled walls, loading dock stairways, brief encounter sites, near the neoclassical splendor of the Camp Hotel, where the summit would be held and delegates housed. He wandered past cafes, restaurants, the city and sculpture museums, pacing distances, measuring angles, determining flow and screening,
These would be the brush pass sites, all within easy walking distance of the comp. Lastly, during a night of driving rain with sheets of water pouring off the monoliths on the facade of the train terminal, Nate went up the side steps and just inside the doors felt the hand, then the heavy weight, of the hotel key in his pocket. A thin-faced man, a non-official cover officer, an NOC from Europe, had taken a room at the Hotel Glow for a week with the throwaway alias. Every night during the conference, Nate would wait in the hotel room to meet Marble when he could get away, wait for the minute scratch at the door, wait to begin the long conversations in the overheated room with the shades down and the television turned up, into the early morning hours while the city slept and the changing traffic lights reflected endlessly off the wet, empty streets. By the time Marble stepped off the plane in Helsinki, the station was prepared to spend as much time as securely possible with him, without remotely showing an American hair on the street. It was early evening after work, and Dominika stood by a window on the mezzanine level of the Torney Hotel across from the swimming pool, waiting for Nate to show. They swam together now at least 3 days a week, but Nate had not been at the pool for 6 days straight. Strange, she thought, feeling a little jilted. A week ago, on a windy spring Sunday, they had met for coffee at the Carousel Cafe on the water in Ulalana. There was a growing forest of swaying rigging in the harbor as the halyards clanked against aluminum masts and clouds moved across a rare blue sky. Dominika had taken a bus, then the metro, and finally two taxis to get to the marina. She argued with herself as she walked along the Hofstraden, but in the end had dabbed a little perfume behind her ears. He came on foot, walking across the road, and there was a spring to his step. Nate was his usual charming self, but there was something else. His purple halo was hazy, faded. He was distracted, something was on his mind. When previously they would have spent 4, 5, 6 hours together, Nate after an hour said he had another commitment. It was unexpected work, nothing social, he assured her, but he had to go. They had walked a little ways together, and when Dominika suggested that the next weekend they might take a ferry to Suomenlena and spend the day exploring the old fortress, Nate said he would love to, but 2 weekends from now would be better. Trees along the street were budding. They could feel the sun on their faces. At a quiet street corner, they stood and faced each other. Dominika was heading home. Nate was going the other way. Dominika could feel him. He radiated nervous energy. He was waiting for something to happen, she thought. "I'm sorry I'm such a pill," said Nate. "Just a lot of work. So, we go to the fortress in 2 weeks together?" "Of course," she said. "I will look for you at the swimming pool. We can arrange Suomenlena when we see each other." She turned across the street. What, she asked herself, had possessed her to use perfume? Nate watched her walk away down the sidewalk of the leafy neighborhood, registering the slight hitch in her stride. Her lean dancer's legs bunched at the calves, and she swung her hands easily as she walked. Then he thought about Marble's imminent arrival. He still had to find an all-clear signal site near the Hotel Glow so Marble would know to come upstairs. He took off. Greek Strapazzata Eggs. In heated olive oil, reduce peeled chopped tomatoes, onions, sugar, salt, and pepper to a thick sauce. Add beaten eggs to the tomatoes and stir vigorously until eggs set into a small fine curd. Serve with grilled country bread drizzled with olive oil. Chapter 13. It's been too long. Where is he? What's he doing? Does he have another target, another woman? Did he break contact because she dropped her cover? She let it go another day, standing in the Torney Hotel across from the swimming pool each evening, waiting for sight of him. She knew he wasn't coming again tonight. This is it. This is what I was sent here to do. She fought off the image of Uncle Vanya in his office, the sooty face of Volontov looking at her each day. She would have to report in the morning.
Walking to her apartment, Dominika barely registered the streets or the lights in the windows. She thought about what would happen tomorrow in the Residentura. Her report about Nate's week-long no-show would be forwarded by immediate cable to the deputy director, eyes only. In line KR, an urgent request to the travel office would produce a list of all Russians traveling to Scandinavia for 6 months previously and 6 months in the future. Diplomats, businessmen, academics, students, officials, even flight crews. The list would be finite. The patient wolves in KR would start eliminating names based on age, profession, history, and most critically, access to state secrets. The pared-down list of leading suspects might contain a dozen names or 100. It wouldn't matter. The SVR would then start watching them in Moscow, covering their mail, monitoring their phones, searching apartments and dachas, dispatching informers to get close. The search would surely extend to Helsinki, she thought. A Directorate K surveillance team might be deployed to cover Nate for 2 or 3 weeks, a month, to observe his activities. Unexpected and invisible, the Directorate K team was referred to in whispered awe. They would record their observations, then the endless watching would begin once back in Moscow. It was inevitable. At the end of the process, if the agent was indeed a Russian, he or she would be arrested, tried, and executed. The Grey Cardinals would have their way again. Her footsteps were loud in the night air. The city was quiet. Who was Nate's agent, she wondered. Why was he betraying Russia? Was this man or woman decent? Venal, treacherous, noble, crazy? She wanted to hear his voice, watch his face. Could she ever sympathize with his motives? Could she ever justify his treason? She thought about her own pettish transgression. You rationalize that easily enough, haven't you, Zavoshika, you great conspirator? Dominika closed her eyes and leaned against the wall of a darkened building. Right now she was the only one who suspected, no, knew, that Nate would be meeting his agent, the mole, and she felt lightheaded. What if she said nothing? What if she denied them the knowledge and the power to win this gambit? Could she be this disloyal? She thought of how her foot had been ruined by that tart Sonia. She remembered the green agony scream in the shower room at the AVR. She flashed to the orange overhead light as a helpless Dillon withered before the thugs and remembered the taste of Ustinov's blood in her mouth. And she saw Anya's milkmaid face choked blue. Let them wait, she decided, determination welling up inside her. This will be horribly dangerous, potentially fatal. Her resolve was fragile, exquisite, forbidden. The power she would wield over Volontov and Uncle Vanya would be real. Her mother was always telling her to control her temper, and now the icy bite in her throat was exhilarating. She began walking again, her heels clicking on the sidewalk. There was something else, a realization that surprised her. She knew enough about the game to know that Nate would be destroyed, his reputation obliterated, if he lost his agent. She replayed their time in Helsinki. She would not do that to him, thinking how much Nate was like her father, how much she liked him. The next morning, sick to her stomach, she showed her pass at the embassy front door, walked across the courtyard and climbed the marble steps to the attic, steps worn smooth by countless officers who had served before her. Služba Veznehi Razvedki, the Foreign Intelligence Service. At the top of the stairs was the massive vault door on massive hinges, then the day door with the cipher lock, and the privacy wire gate with the electric keypad. She put her purse down on her desk, nodded to a colleague. Volontov stood at his office door, beckoning. Dominika stood in front of his desk, unable to take her eyes away from his doughy hands. "Any developments to report, Corporal?" asked Volontov. He was cleaning his nails with a letter opener. Her heart was racing and the pounding in her head would not stop. Did it show? Did he know something? She heard her voice in her head as if someone else in the room were speaking.
Colonel, I have discovered that the American seems to favor museums, said Dominika. Her voice sounded wooden. I have invited him to the Kaizma Art Gallery soon. I plan to have dinner afterward, in my apartment. What was she saying? The very thing Volontov wanted to hear. Volontov looked up from his manicure, grunted, and stared at her breasts. It's about time. Make sure you entertain him so he will want to visit you again, he said. You haven't seen anything out of the ordinary? Three words. Yes, I have. And the machine would take over. Her responsibility would be over. A simple sentence. He said he is busy in the next 2 weeks, was all that would be necessary. The roaring in her ears grew louder and the edges of her vision clouded. Dominika could barely make out this hog behind his desk, wrapped in his dingy orange haze. Her throat closed and she was amazed to feel her legs tremble, knees actually knocking, quite extraordinary, and she resisted leaning against the desk, willed herself to stop. Volontov continued looking at her chest, a wing of pomaded hair sticking out from the side of his head. In the last millisecond, Dominika decided. There's nothing to report at this time, she said, heart pounding. She had stepped across the line separating being guilty of an infraction to committing treason against the state. They would find out. They would send men with ice picks to stab her to death like Trotsky. They would roll her mother into a furnace. Volontov looked at her for a moment, grunted again, and waved her out of his office. In a flash, Dominika knew he suspected nothing. She was sure of her instincts and felt the ice in her veins tingling. Dominika returned to her desk, sat heavily in her chair. Her hands were damp and shaking, and she looked around the room at the officers and secretaries at other desks. All had their heads down, reading, typing, or writing. Except Marta Yelenova, sitting at a desk two across from Dominika's. Marta was holding a cigarette, staring at her. Dominika smiled thinly and looked away. Marta, Dominika supposed, was the closest thing she had to a friend in the embassy. She was the senior administrative assistant in the Residentura. They had spoken in the office occasionally, had sat next to each other during a dinner for some unknown embassy colleague. They had met one rainy Sunday for a walk along the harbor and among the fresh food stalls in the market square. Marta was elegant, aristocratic, about 50 with thick brown hair that she wore down to her shoulders. She had dark, prominent eyebrows over the most striking hazel eyes. Her fine mouth tended to turn up at the corners in a wry smile that hinted at an unshakably cynical view of the world. She was one of those with strong color about her head and body, a deep ruby red of passion and heat, a red as when Dominika listened to music. Dominika thought Marta must have been a beauty in her youth. She rounded on any man in the office who made even the slightest comment about her Juno-esque figure, now a little thick around the waist, sending him scuttling for the exit. Marta was not in the least fazed by Resident Volontov, characteristically telling him that he would get the voucher or the accounting or the monthly report when she finished it. Volontov could not dent her Olympian aplomb. Dominika previously knew nothing about Marta's life, but if she had, she would have been amazed to learn that Marta Yelenova had in 1983 been conscripted by the KGB to attend State School 4, Sparrow School, in the forest outside Kazan. She was 20 years old. Her father had fought in the Great Patriotic War, then became an NKVD guard at the Leningrad headquarters, a party member, a loyal vassal of the state. Marta's heartbreaking beauty had been noticed by a KGB major from Moscow making an inspection tour, and he arranged for her to be hired into the service as, he originally hoped, his special assistant. Marta's father, who knew the game but nevertheless hoped for a better life for her, said nothing and sent his only daughter to Moscow to live with his sister and to begin work in the KGB's second chief directorate, Internal Security, 7th Department, Operations Against Tourists, 3rd Section, Hotels and Restaurants.
The 7th Department alone employed 200 officers and 1,600 part-time informants and agents. Now in Moscow, it was inevitable that Marta would be noticed